Blog Talk Radio.
Do you know God has called you? Do you know your purpose? Let us help you get on cue.
More about the heart of leadership than the heart of leadership. What their power does is make their hope for you come alive.
Welcome to the show. You're listening to On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. Thanks for joining us tonight. Friends, no matter if you're the preacher or the usher or a section leader or the first clarinet, no matter what the role, you have a purpose and you're leading that purpose. Our goal here is simple: inspire and equip others all to lead where they are. In other words, get us on cue with God's will and his purpose, and get us on cue with his calling in our lives and his purpose, and get us others on cue with that purpose. You know, what is cue? It is how Nehemiah, a model transformation leader, led a starved, desperate, broken, isolated people in building a wall and essentially building a way of life that stands to this day. He cued them up, and C-U-E, C is common ground. What can we agree on is really the why. U is for unified thought. What vision can we share is the what. And E, equally yield. What is the game plan? What does the success look like? And what is my and your role in it? It's really the how. So Q leadership integrates biblical principles of leadership using Nehemiah as a model in helping you do two things. One, get people to trust you. And secondly, get people to follow you, the discipleship. So we call that our axis of leadership, trust and discipleship. And so, you know, we always start off our show with our prayer. It's the Lord, you're wonderful, merciful Lord. Lord, we thank you for this day. Lord, continue to lead and bless this ministry and our audience and all that are serving you in his name. Lord, we know that this Q leadership is your brainchild and our calling. We honor you today by doing two things, giving you the glory and impacting this generation through Q leadership. So, Lord, your word in Romans 12:2 tells us, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable and perfect will of God. So, Lord, we thank you for this day, and please use this ministry to complete your purpose and equip, align, and transform leaders for your glory, and help others to hear the call, receive the call. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. So, on cue, what we try to do is have a dialogue, a conversation about leadership based in God's word. We equip leaders with a roadmap and tap into faith in building that trust and build that discipleship. We highlight everyday leaders who are making a difference that can testify to God's goodness and be transformational. Our show is, I'll tell you what it's not. It is not to criticize, but to shine a light on some truth and love. It is not to tell you what to do, but provide a different lens and to see things. And it's not to focus on the mere symptoms of problems, to talk about those, but really look at the root. We want to treat the infection and not run your nose. So today, just like any day, I ask us all, even myself, to be open and that we hear the Lord and not me, and we have the right questions, and no matter what the differences are, remember that this life is about love at the end of the day. And so there will be differences of opinions, of course, and that's what makes a fruitful dialogue, and that's what makes us grow as we go through this. But let us do what a true transformational leader says, and let us agree without being disagreeable. And so with that, I always use that phrase every show, and the author of that phrase is Dr. Martin Luther King. And so he is, of course, the subject of our show. But before we, as we launch today, I'm going to do something a little bit different. I want to play this audio of him in years back about being a drum major. Just stay with us. Hold on for a second.
Every now and then, I just all think, Richard, about that day when we will be victimized with what is life's final common denominator. That's something we call death. We all think about it, and every now and then I think about my own death, and I think about my own funeral, and I don't think of it in a morbid sense. Every now and then I ask myself, what is it that I would once say, and I leave the word to you this morning. If any of you are around when I have to meet my day, I don't want a long funeral. And if you get somebody to deliver the eulogy, tell them not to talk too long. And every now and then I wonder what I want them to say. Tell them not to mention that I have a Nobel Peace Prize. That isn't important. Tell them not to mention that I have 300 or 400 other awards. That's not important. Tell them not to mention where I went to school. I'd like somebody to mention that day that Martin Luther King Jr. tried to give his life serving others. I'd like for somebody to say that day that Martin Luther King Jr. tried to love somebody. I want you to say that day that I tried to be right on the war question. I want you to be able to say that day that I did try to feed the hungry. I want you to be able to say that day that I did try in my life to clothe those who were naked. I want you to say on that day that I did try in my life to visit those who were in prison. I want you to say that I tried to love and serve humanity. Yes, if you want to say that I was a drum major, say that I was a drum major for justice. Say that I was a drum major for peace. I was a drum major for righteousness. And all of the other shallow things will not matter. I won't have any money to leave behind. I won't have the fine and luxurious things of life to leave behind. But I just want to leave a committed life behind. And that's all I want to say. If I can help somebody as I pass along, if I can cheer somebody with a word of song, if I can show somebody he's traveling wrong, then my living will not be in vain. If I can do my duty as a Christian ought, if I can bring salvation to a world once wrought, if I can spread the message as the Master taught, then my living will not be in vain. Yes, Jesus, I want to be on your right or your left side. Not for any selfish reason. I want to be on your right or your left side, not in terms of some political kingdom or ambition, but I just want to be there in love and in justice and in truth and in commitment to others so that we can make of this old world a new world.
Wow, those are words of the most influential speaker, Reverend, theologian, civil rights leader, truest transformation leader of our time, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It was from a sermon, The Drum Major Instinct, that delivered on February 4th, 1968, Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. King preached about the drum major instincts is really the desire for recognition, importance, significance, relevance, and it is the foundation, as he shares, of one's ego and the need for validation. He shared that the human ego loves to shine in all his glory and greatness at his best as we are all loved and appreciated. The biblical reference he used was taken from St. Mark when James and John, sons of Zebedee, wanted to be seated at the right and the left hand of Jesus. James and John had big aspirations of becoming kings and waiting for opportunity for that to become the reality. And they appeared pretty self-absorbed, waiting, wanting to be in direct association with Christ himself. They wanted to become more noticeable, which can be dangerous if anyone can do anything to get some prestige. The drum major instinct is not always unhealthy, though. Dr. King's speech challenges us to use our own drum major instinct to uplift and inspire others to create justice, peace, and by living a commitment of truth and love for all mankind. In other terms, get on cue with what God's will has for us. But I find it in sometimes a direct contrast of what he was. He was a true drum major, just like the drum major in most marching bands. His position of one of leadership, distinction, instruction, group representation, often revered by those and bands that they lead, and he's really the figurehead that everyone notices. And he's out front as distinctive, is very powerful. And friends, if you, I grew up in L.A., of course, Lowell, Alabama, if you didn't know, small town, Greenville, The first time I saw this distinctive drum major was at the Turkey Day Classic in the late 70s in Montgomery, Alabama. First I heard the rhythm and the trumpets and the drums, and you knew what you were really about to see a show because they were just warming up. As the band turned the corner, the show was led by this tall, slender, smooth, high-stepping leader of the band, the drum major. He led the band, you know, then and blowing his whistle and twirling his baton. He was a conductor. He conducted the show, the ensemble, strong bursts of vocal directions and sharp, crisp hand gestures. He controlled the tempo where all the movements like military precision, and he ultimately assisted the musicality. He kind of knew what the directions needed to be, kind of set the whole show on cue. And so he was a performer. At the end of the day, he was absolutely a performer, dressed sharper than anybody else, and led the band, of course, in and off the field, and of course, doing the dance routines, he was always the show. Ultimately, he was a leader. He led the instructions and this whole group under the director. Of course, he's under the director of the band director, but however, he carried the authority of the band director, the instructor, and completed the leadership of the band. He also led and rose rising drum majors to carry on the work after him. So the most important thing, the most significant thing for me was the whistle and the baton. They were really the tools, the instruments that this drum major used. And so this audio from Dr. King, who was reflecting on death, and it's something we all have to experience, but, you know, if you think about the whistle and baton, his whistle was to do God's will, to spread a message, as he said, what the master taught, and what the master taught Jesus Christ is love. And so as we know that whole thing, that whole spirit, that whole message didn't end and die with him, the question was, you know, what did the baton pass to? I believe that in my personal view is that those who grab that drum major baton and the whistle after his death did have that drum major instinct that Christ talked about with James and John and the sons of Zebedee. They used that and now they didn't take that message and really, in my mind, perverted it, which is part of another question, another show, but ultimately, that's the question of the day. MLK, the drum major, who has the whistle baton? And after his death, you know, really, the question is, what should we really know about the drum major, Dr. King? Why the need for transformational leaders like him, and who carries, and who should carry that legacy, and who should carry that whistle and that baton. So to help us with that, we have a good long-term time friend of mine, Zofia Bryant. She's a founder and CEO of Bryant Education Leadership Group, and she started Bryant Education Leadership Group based upon the principles that we should stand on the shoulders of giants. What a better giant to start this conversation with than Dr. King. And on the premise, to whom what much is given, much is required. Her vision was to create an organization that would develop leaders of all ages and would become the premier source of leadership, education, primary producer of global leaders for the next generation, and right at the footprint of what Q Leadership is all about. So after the break, we'll bring her on, so stay with us, can't afford to miss us. And so if you're taking calls and any responses, please call us at 310-861-2331 or log on to Blog Talk Radio. So you can ask any questions. Feel free to mash the button to raise your hand if you want to have a comment. And, of course, producer and assistant Kennedy will bring you right in. So, friends, we'd love to hear from you. Please call us again at 310-861-2331. This is On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. We'll be right back.
How do you lead a people who are starved, who are broken, who are isolated?
You lead them where they are, by getting them on cue with God's will, by getting them on cue with His calling on their lives. Let us help you get on cue.
I think it's great for not only from the perspective of learning leadership, learning different qualities that you need in leadership, but So where do I realistically fit? Who can I get to critique me, to be honest with me, on where do I fit on this matrix? We all know one of you. But the question is, where are we now? What do we need to do to get there? So look.
How powerful is your leadership? Do people trust you? Would people follow you if you were not their boss, not their parent, not their sibling, not their commanding officer? Let us help you get on cue.
This workshop really is a good thing of being part of the whole community being on cue as it relates to more than leadership style, but having what did you learn? I learned more about the heart of leadership than the heart of leadership. What the empowerment of an organization is, makes the leadership of you come alive. It should be a mandatory part of every church pre-nutrition plan, every school.
We're back. Thanks for staying with us. You are listening on Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. Remember, our mission is to equip leaders to lead where they are by getting on cue with God's will and His purpose. Follow us on Twitter at Cue Leadership. We're taking calls and we'd love to hear from you. Friends, our number is 310-861-2331. And so friends, we're talking about MLK, the drum major. And the question of the day is, who has his whistle and baton? On this week's show, we remember the truest transformational leader of our time, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and really discuss various things about him. You know, why I say the truest, because I do, of course, our ministry, our Q leadership is based upon Nehemiah, biblical reference for who built a really transformational aspect that allowed the Lord lead him to move a nation and to build a wall, building a way of life. He was on key with God's will. And so I say the same thing with Dr. King. On key with God's will, on key with his purpose, and had others on key with that purpose. He gave God the glory, and he impacted others. Simple. He was grounded in the Lord, not politics, not in a selfish for admiration, as the sons of Zebedee were. And he understood that this life was not about him. He was a true drum major. And we will answer a few questions, you know, like why should we, what we surely know, should we really know about the drum major, why the need for transformational leaders, as well as who carries those, that whistle baton, his legacy. And to help us with that, we have Ms. Sophia Bryant, founder and CEO of Bryant Educational Leadership Group, and starting on the principle, stand on the shoulders of giants, and to whom much is given, much is required. So, Zafia, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Glad to be with you on this evening.
Good to hear your voice. It's been a long time.
Same here. It has. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. You know, when you're out making an impact and you're moving and you're starting where you are, that's exactly what we want to highlight on our show. Leaders just like yourself, and hopefully we'll get a chance to get in some of your career, and you've been in some exciting places over the last almost 20 years or so. So awesome. So I always start the show with guests with a few, some similar questions, but this one is always, can be tricky, but at the same time, I'm sure, you know, someone like you, you know yourself. What is that one word that describes you?
It's interesting, like you said, you know, most people do have a sense of who they are, and I would say the word that I'll share that will describe me is probably not the word that other people would use to describe me. But for me, at the heart of who I am, I think I'm a dreamer. Interesting
dreamer.
In terms of us being a, yes, a dreamer. So it's just really interesting for us to sit on the call tonight and talk about Dr. King, the ultimate dreamer. But
absolutely.
I tell you what, I remember being in the fifth grade, and I had a teacher. Sometimes people plant seeds, and those seeds really take root. I remember that teacher saying, if it's to be done, you could do it. And that stayed with me. And I always knew that, you know, I had some big and bold dreams, and if I just kept working and kept doing what I needed to do, that nothing was impossible, that I could achieve anything that I wanted to do, no matter what. And so I'm just very thankful that there was a mentor, somebody who poured into me to help me dream bigger, particularly when I was in a circumstance that normally wouldn't allow me to dream bigger.
Absolutely. But, you know, I can see that as well. You know, even though, of course, you know, we spent a lot of time in college, but ultimately I can see that coming through and through of being a dreamer. But sometimes, especially where we come from, you have to be in order to remove impact for the next generation. So, you know, moving to my next piece is, I probably already know the answer to this, and you're probably living it, but I go ahead and ask it anyway, because if money was no issue, what would you do every day?
Well, you know what? It's interesting that you would say that, and I think your answer would be absolutely correct. It's working within the organization I'm working with now, the Bryant Educational Leadership Group. It is a wonderful thing that you can, when you can walk within your calling.
Absolutely.
And I
you
truly...
know, your life gets a whole lot easier when it's that clear, you have that clarity. So tell us about Bryant Educational Leadership Group.
Well, you know what, as much like you said before, the organization was founded based upon the premise, we stand on the shoulders of giants, and to whom much is given, much is required. So, you know, I think about people like Dr. King and other mentors and leaders that poured into my life. I think about my dad, you know, growing up in the South and having to work many jobs for low wages, and a mom who didn't have a lot of education and access was an issue for us. And I think about everything that was poured into me as a young child and so many opportunities that I got that, you know, I was just blessed that those doors were open for me. And so I really believe, you know, in the core of who I am and in my being, that anything that I do has to be done, you know, first to glorify God.
Amen.
And then next to be able to impact the lives of young people. And I think that was my call. That was why I was placed here. And so BELG as an organization is a vehicle to do just that, is to transform the lives of young people. But more so, you know, when their lives are transformed, everybody has a responsibility and an obligation. So it's not just, okay, Zafia is transformed, you know, and she becomes a better person. But what happens as a result? Is my community better? You know, is the people around me, are they better? Are the institutions that I work within, are they better? You know, is the world better because of my existence? And so that's the entire premise. You know, BELG, we want to raise up global leaders, not people who are just going to be so minute in their thinking that they're only being selfish in looking at what it is that I can gain. But now how do you give back? And you have an obligation to give back. So we want to plant those seeds. So when we say we're going to touch one student at a time, that's what we do. We touch one student at a time, ultimately, and they go out and they transform the world.
Yeah, you see how the Lord's working, because you're perfect for this topic today. from the dreamer perspective, helping people leave where they are, understanding, I go back to your comment about what the teacher in fifth grade shared with you, and I guess I had a similar instance, but they said it in this way, said, you know, there's nothing, nobody can get what the Lord has in store for you, only you can get it. And when I heard that, I was probably about 6th or 7th grade at a church retreat at a lake in our hometown, and someone said that, it just stuck with me, because at that point, yeah, if I lose it, I'm not going to be a victim. If I lose, I need to go back and reassess, right, and so I can get better. Which just wasn't my season at that particular point. So that is amazing how, you know, we became friends. Our lives are really more parallel a lot, and then now we kind of come back.
Right.
How, see how the Lord works. It is absolutely
in
awesome.
In mysterious ways, but always aligned. It's always about that divine destiny. And he Absolutely. Brings those people back full circle.
Absolutely, because he wants to use us all in order to really impact this generation and the next. You're part of a Difference Maker series I'm a part of. I kicked it off back in November with JFK, and today, of mm-hmm. course, we're MLK. And as I said, the truest transformation leader of our time. What does he mean to you?
Wow. Well, you know, Eric, both of us, we grew up in the South.
Right.
And I think when you grow up in the South, you can definitely have a deeper appreciation for the work of Dr. King. And I grew up in a segregated area. You know, I had a grandmother who lived to be 103 years old. Mm-hmm. I had a father who worked off for lower wages, who was never paid above board. You know, I had a mother and a father who could not go to the same school systems as other people. So they didn't have those opportunities. So one only graduated from high school. Mom only went to the fourth grade. You know, so I think about Dr. King and who he was to my family, and I think about, you know, this deep philosophy that I have, that you stand on the shoulders of a giant. So I think about Dr. King, you know, in 1963, I believe, Dr. King came to Birmingham. And he came mm-hmm. because it was one of the most racist areas in the country, the most segregated, one of the most hateful. And he came there, and he sat in that Birmingham jail. And one thing that man said, he wrote within a letter, he said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Right.
And because he came there to Birmingham, he was able to change the conditions for my father, for my mom, for my family. And so I stand on his shoulders. You know, when you talk about true transformation, that's Dr. King. He
Absolutely.
Changed the environment and the space in which he was in. So I am so very thankful for people like him who had a dream, but it wasn't just dreaming. You know, you
wow.
can dream, but if you don't transform the space.
Absolutely.
That's the kind of man that he was. And so, you know, I look at him as a mentor, as a role model. And really somebody who, you know, I live under his philosophies, along with many other people, but he really definitely made an impact in my life and really made an impact in the lives of people, particularly from Birmingham and all over the world. Are you there with me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay, yes, I have little phone issues, but, you know, one thing with Dr. King, I just have a lot of respect and I have a lot of admiration for Dr. King. And one thing you would hear the Bible talk about is don't get weary in well-doing.
Absolutely.
For in due time you're going to reap what you sow. And so I think about this man who started his journey very young. And I think about somebody much like myself, you know, young person. Dr. King lived to be less than 40, but made one of the greatest impacts in the world. And so, you know, when you have an example like that, it just says that you too can do anything. Yes, he got weary. Yes, he got tired, but he didn't stop. He was arrested.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
he
was
willing,
beaten.
Knowing that there's going to be some sacrifice. Knowing there's
exactly.
going to be.
So he is just one of those giants. He's one of those giants that I stand upon.
That we all stand on it. It's amazing to hear you, how much we parallel each other. I know I'm not going to make this show about me, but it's just so amazing that my father, sixth grade education, my mom graduated from high school, just the opposite, right?
Wow. Somehow I've lost you, Eric. I'm not sure that I'm hearing you now.
Our audio going in a better way. So stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. We'll be right back with Sophia Bryant to talk about MLK as a drum major who has this Wilson baton. We'll be right back.
I left Atlanta this morning, and as we got started on the plane. There were six of us. The pilot said over the public address system, "We are sorry for the delay. But we have Dr. Martin Luther King on the plane. And to be sure that all of the bags were checked. And to be sure that nothing would be wrong on the plane, we had to check out everything carefully. And we've had the plane protected and guarded all night." And then I got into Memphis. And some began to say the threat, or talk about the threat that were out. What would happen to me from some of our sick white brothers? Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
And we're back. Thanks for staying with us. You're listening on Q. I'm your host, Eric Powell. Our mission here is to equip leaders to lead where they are, getting us on Q with God's will and His purpose. And the question of the day is, MLK, the voice you just heard, the drum major, who has his whistle baton? And if that always, almost most of the things he says that we record his audio gives me chills, but that is one that really does hits my spirit. And Zafia, I don't know if that's the case with you as always when you hear that piece, but that particular audio has a lot in it, and it's amazing for me, and it's also a big part of how I believe and how I conduct myself.
Right, absolutely. Same here, Eric.
So, Zafia, we're talking about who influenced you, stand on the shoulder of a giant. Talking about a little background from your perspective, you know, we're talking about this transformational leader of Dr. King, and he meant so much to so many different people, not only just those in the South, young and old, black and white, and, you know, the whole focus of love, and that's a universal element. But, you know, right. I want to shift gears just for a second. You know, if you look back in history, you take anything from, you know, before the Bible, before Christ, after Christ, you know, why the need for a transformational leader? Why did the Lord raise transformational leaders in your mind?
Well, honestly, Eric, I think it could easily go back to that quote that I mentioned earlier, one of Dr. King's quotes, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere."
Yep.
And there are still injustices happening in the world around us. You know, I'm going to share a story. I remember not long ago, I went to a Boys and Girls Club, and it was on an opposite side of town. It was a pretty, you know, well-to-do community and area, and I went into this YMCA, and there was a Subway there. There were computer labs there. There was indoor Olympic-sized swimming pools there. It was state-of-the-art everything, you know, outside trails, everything that you could ask for was in that YMCA. And then I went to the urban side of town, and I went into that YMCA that had no swimming pool, that had no resources, had no computers. So when I look at education and the disparities that still exist, and I look at different systems, and I look at the inequities that still exist, and when I look at the achievement gap that still exists, there's still a lot of work to be done. when I look at people that are in leadership, yes, we have Barack Obama, who is our president now, the first African American, but there is still work to be done. And so when you talk about transformational leadership, that's shifting the environment and shifting the space. And so we need people who are going to be bold and who are going to be courageous, like a Dr. King, who's going to stand for something. You
right.
know,
and
Dr.
not be
King
idle,
about,
not stand in fear.
Exactly.
Go through. You're exactly right.
Eric.
When you look at if it's any type of injustice, if it's from a physical, any type of violence, it's really like Dr. King. You know, he was fighting for freedom for us, but I think it was much deeper. And hopefully you can go with me here. But it was more, yeah, you want to free us from being able to do, walk, talk, drink from a water fountain, go to school together,
right.
get the right education. But I think it was just, it was freeing the minds of the oppressors, but I think it was even more minds who were oppressed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. There's just still work to do. There's still work to do, and we have to, like I said, we have to lead in the space in which we're in.
Sure, absolutely. You know, part of what, if you look back from Sophia, am I losing you?
I'm here.
Okay. Got it. Okay, great. Thanks for staying with us. We have a little technical. I don't know if it's my side or your side, but that's a whole lot better, I think. When we asked the question around why the need for transformational leaders, and it's part of if I get to the people who are being causing this disparity or causing or being the oppressor. It's kind of a bondage. I think that's probably what he was trying to do in my mind, break a bondage. If it's from the physical, the mental, or the spiritual, you know, how do you see that being a play in your work of really just freeing people's mind, body, and spirit as we go through and transform our society?
Well, you know, liberation is a very interesting thing when we talk about that. And, you know, we talk about, you know, oneself, you have to be able to liberate your mind and your thinking and your thoughts. Part of that is just exposure and knowledge around what's happening in the world. And I think, you know, we have an obligation also. You know, I think about, you know, children who might grow up in the South, who might grow up in, there are still some very segregated communities in the South. And there might not be knowledge or awareness around what's happening in the world, which might give them the ability to not dream or to dream or what have you, or to be able to get out of those circumstances. But, you know, education, reading, empowerment, you know, we have to be able to enable, we have to equip folks, and we have to empower them in that space. And that's where part of that liberation comes in. So,
sure.
You know,
the liberation,
that education piece.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Now, so liberation, is it become more so who or how, what people, is it those that are in the situations, their families, their those around them, people that influence them? What role do everyone plays, not only just in the being in the circumstance, but also bringing them out that circumstance from a liberation?
Well, honestly, I think everybody has to be held accountable for that. You know, when you talk about village values and really getting back to some very basic philosophies and models, you know, everybody is responsible. You know, an individual has to be able to take ownership for, to a certain degree, somewhat to their circumstances, and also to be able to help elevate themselves, because sometimes you might be in situations where somebody can't equip you and give you those elements that you need to be successful. So sometimes you have to be able to stand when you don't have other people around you to lift you up. But at the same time, as a community, we all have an obligation. We have an obligation to pour into the lives of young people. You know, we have the elders, you know, who we look to for wisdom and we depend upon to be able to pour into the lives of young people. But when you talk about this idea of passing batons and who's going to pick up the torch and those kinds of things, everybody has a responsibility. You got to close that generational gap. How do you do that? Everybody has to be empowered. So everybody has to have a voice, and everybody has to be authentic in terms of sharing their voice.
Sure. So as you transition right into one of the next questions regarding carrying the baton, carrying the legacy of Dr. King, and, you know, would be probably a little, not necessarily provocative, but ultimately, if the question is, it's in three parts, you know, who carried it, who carries it, and who should carry it. But if I want to think about just my own personal perspective, that gap you talked about, I think we also part of those leaders who took the baton didn't necessarily do a great job. Because I look at his death, mm-hmm. Some chose to hate after his death. Some chose to continue his legacy from a love perspective. And I think there's those in the middle using that fear, maintaining that hope, the veil of both, like certain people, and I won't call names and so forth on the show, but I'm able to use that and really did not necessarily close a gap that we needed from that generation to ours. And you maybe agree or disagree, but that's just my perspective. Those who carry that baton didn't necessarily do the best job. I'm not here to disparage people, but ultimately we got to confront the reality that there is a gap we still got to close in order to move forward.
Absolutely. You know, I think about that, Eric, and I think about, you know, you're right. Certain people didn't do what they could have done. But I also have to ask the question also is, you know, were they trained and were they developed to be able to pick up that torch and run? And I think sometimes that's what happens. You know, you have someone like Dr. King who's leading, and I think sometimes when you look, some people see this person as being such a giant. Well, wow, who am I? How can I step into those shoes? So everybody, right, again, has a responsibility. When you talk about legacy building, how are you really sharing information and making sure that next generation has the ability to be able to lead in the space where they are? How do you make sure that things are still relevant and current? Because where we might have used marching as a means in the 1960s, that might not necessarily be the modern-day means for young people today. But how do we equip them to lead in the space where they are and help close that gap? So,
I agree with you. Absolutely. You're exactly right. And it's kind of part of the premise of starting this. When we look at leaders, I do say a lot of the challenges we deal with is because of the failure in leadership and the cap is because of one of two reasons. You hit on the first one, incompetence. You're not necessarily ready. You're not equipped. And the second one is imprudent. You're not, just not doing the right thing. Your focus is on yourself. And so I do see that. But also there's a lot of great there's a lot of great examples of people like your grandmother, like your father and your
mm-hmm.
mother. Who you didn't have to be on the big stage. They led where they are in
yes.
order to you. They sacrificed themselves, their generation, in order to give you an education, in order to move the generations forward. And that's the powerful thing of where now we got to understand, you know, what's our role in carrying it? Who's carrying this legacy now?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the simple answer is you and me, but what's your perspective on who's carrying it now? And how well are we doing it?
You know what, Eric, you just made a phenomenal statement, and I think, you know, you talk about my grandmother and you talk about your grandparents and your father and those who came before us, you know, but you also said you don't have to always be on a giant stage. And so,
absolutely.
You know, Dr. King said anybody can be great because anybody can serve. So he said you didn't have to have the college degree. You know, you didn't have to have your subject and verb agree, those kinds of things. But I think we have to also celebrate the folks who are down in the trenches, whose name is not always up in light sometimes, because everybody is making a difference and people sacrifice so other people could have. And
yeah,
so we have
absolutely.
To remember those soldiers.
Mm-hmm. It's those soldiers who are making the sacrifice, who what Jesus was trying to tell the sons of Zebedee what they need to be focusing on rather than being out front. The will, do the work. And so with that, you know, going forward, you know, and it's probably an easier answer for you, too, considering that you're stepping out and doing the work you're doing with the Bright Education Leadership Group, you know, who should carry this, the whistle and the baton forward? And how is that influencing, how should that influence the world?
Well, like I said, I believe that everybody has a responsibility. It doesn't matter where you are. You know, it could be at your schools, within your communities, within your churches, within your jobs. You have a responsibility to make the space better than for those who come after you. So everybody has a responsibility. You know, I think that calling is important.
Absolutely.
Everybody has an obligation to figure out what their purpose is, what they're passionate around. And when you can figure that out and within those spaces, then you make a difference.
Yep.
So it might
absolutely.
Not be
and you're exactly right, because part of our whole oral curriculum, you know, of course the radio show is just a facet of it, is the Q leadership. We help people understand their purpose and really just some simple, basic ways of really kind of get you connected with what that is and really confirm it in a sense. And so that you're exactly right. It is the calling, understanding that, and then being able to be bold enough to walk into that purpose. Not necessarily wait till you get money or you get equipped or you get yourself settled, but just start where you are. And I really applaud you for you're doing. So talk about Brian, Education Leadership Group, and how his dream influenced your organization. And the reason I put – you talked about a lot of that already, but ultimately I remember reading – a series or an award about being a drum major, and that just really just stuck out. I said, well, that's powerful. They're already using some of those principles and how it influenced your organization. Can you talk about that a little bit?
It's interesting that you say that. I remember getting that award. It was a Drum Major for Justice Award that was given by a community organization in Maryland, and I really started to think about that award and what that meant. And, you know, in terms of standing for justice and equality. And
hey, Sophia, let us we're coming up. You're breaking up a little bit.
Okay.
Let's take a quick, like a minute half break, and
okay.
See if you can call us. I guess on another quick line, because I want the audience, our friends, to hear this, because it's very very important point you're making here. So we're going to take a quick 1 minute break and call us right back if we can. Okay, we'll chime you right back.
Okay,
in.
Sounds great. Okay.
You're looking on cue, and we'll be right back in about a minute and a half.
Do you know God has called you? Do you know your purpose? Let us help you get on cue.
Lead them where they are by getting them on cue for God's will, by getting them on cue with His calling on their lives. Let us help you get on cue.
Full is your leadership. Do people trust you? Would people follow you if you were not their boss, not their parent, not their sibling, not their commanding officer? Let us help you get on cue.
Of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, When we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last." I left Atlanta this morning, and as we got started on the plane, there were six of us. The pilot said over the public address system, "We are sorry for the delay, but we have Dr. Martin Luther King on the plane, and to be sure that all of the bags were checked, and to be sure that nothing would be wrong on the plane, we had to check out everything carefully, and we've had the plane protected and guarded all night." And then I got into Memphis, and some began to say the threat, or talk about the threat that were out. What would happen to me from some of our sick white brothers? Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
And we're back. Thanks for staying with us. You're listening on cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. Our mission here to equip leaders to lead where they are by getting us on cue with God's will and his purpose. And that clip there with Dr. King really sums it up, where letting the Lord lead you and moving you to another place. And with a question of the day, we're addressing MLK, the drum major, who has his whistle and baton, and we have our special guest, Mr. Thea Bryant, who is the founder and CEO of Bryant Education Leadership Group, who are really making an impact, teaching our young and old as well as all in order to essentially leave where they are. So, Sophia, I think we have you back, and thanks for staying back with us with the, through the technical difficulties.
No problem.
Absolutely.
Hopefully this is better.
Good, good. So when you hear that last clip, what do you think about?
You know, again, I just think about Dr. King's resiliency and who he was. You know, he was so concerned about his people and being able to make a difference. You know, he was a servant. You know, he was a poor servant, you know, filled with humility and love for humankind. And, you know, I think about, you know, people would always ask, you know, what are you willing to die for? He was willing to die for his people. And so what, how, you know, powerful is that? You know, today I asked young people, and I heard this not long ago, and it just resonated with me. You know, what are you willing to live for? What are you going to stand for and fight for? So it's just amazing to hear somebody with that kind of courage, you know, fearless, who really just had a desire to change the world and to do good by his people.
Absolutely, regardless of what, come what may, and that's the way I look.
Exactly.
And that's what he said. He wasn't fearing any man. Just come what may. I'm doing the Lord's will.
Exactly.
To protect me. So, you know, with that, talk about his dream, those things, how it influenced your organization. We've talked about parts of it today, tonight, but ultimately, how did it really influence how you teach it, what you share, how you relate, how you make an impact with those who come through your organization?
Well, I think for me, when we talk about BELG, you know, it's not just about me. I have this incredible group of women who are a part of the leadership team who are extremely passionate around the work and developing young people. But everybody who is a part of our leadership team recognizes that there was somebody who came before them who was responsible for them being where they are today. And I think because of that, since we make sure that no matter, we just finished a national conference, and people might have gotten tired of me saying when I stepped up to the podium that we stand on the shoulders of giants, and you'll keep hearing that. And to whom much is given, much is required. But we have to continue to instill that in young people so they know that they have a responsibility to change the world and to transform the space that they're in. And so when you think about people like Dr. King, you think about a Fannie Lou Hamer, or you think about a Nelson Mandela and others who came along to help make our conditions better, you know, we have a responsibility to be able to reach back and pull other people forward. And so that's the legacy of Dr. King. So, you know, that legacy is embedded into the philosophy of the organization, into the mission of the organization. People have to understand their history. People have to have a deep respect and admiration for those who came before. And then you pay homage to them by going out and doing the work. And I think for me that's really profound within the people that I work with. People know that, look, had those individuals not fought for us, we wouldn't be here. So we have a responsibility. And so we work really hard because we want to be able to pay homage and respect for those who came and for those who gave. But we also want to continue to build another legacy. You know, we have children that will come after us that still has to exist in this world. So you're supposed to make their circumstance better than what it was when you were growing up.
Leave somebody better from where you found them. At the end of the day, right?
Exactly.
So you mentioned your recent national event. I think it was the African American Student Leadership Experience. Can you talk about that, your event, and how well it went, and how people can find out more things about it?
Sounds good. Well, this we just completed our third annual African American Student Leadership Experience, and one thing that I will say, we don't have conferences. We have experiences, and I think that helps to distinguish us between other events that are out there. When people come into our space, there's a certain energy that comes along. You have a core group of people who are, like I said, extremely passionate around developing the next generation of global leaders, but we also have an unabiding faith and hope in the next generation of people. So we come together and we have this experience to help impact young people. But much like our mission, we say that we're to enable, equip, and empower. So the African American Student Leadership Experience, ASLE, is one of the vehicles to be able to do that. So we bring in nationally renowned speakers. This year we had a theme, I Lead, Back to Basics, Beyond Mobilization Towards Transformational Leadership. And so when we talk about Dr. King today, you know, Dr. King, like I said earlier, he didn't just march. You know, he transformed the space that he was in. So we brought in national speakers like a Donna Brazile, a Kevin Powell, a Jeff Johnson, and some folks who could really speak toward being solution-oriented and being action-oriented and being able to change spaces for the better. And so we had incredible workshops. We had students who worked with each other. They came from all over the United States. And they came from Africa. We had students who came from Nigeria because, again, we had to understand that it's not just about the U.S. This is global. You know, we have to impact the world in terms of where we are. And so we are trying to train up leaders who understand that. So they would have dynamic workshops. We had some of the best facilitators in the country that came in and taught them the basic skills around leadership and around networking and being effective in their spaces when they go back to their campuses. So students, on the first day, we had an opening town hall that was absolutely phenomenal. We had Jeff Johnson to moderate that. We had people from civic organizations from across the country. We had Trans Africa represented. We had the John D. O'Brien National Think Tank for Black Professionals at Predominantly White Institutions, and many other groups, to just name a few, who talked about their organizations, where they were, how they were impacting the world. But we also gave the students an opportunity to work within groups, because we're about creating movements. So it's not just coming and getting a skill, but how does that skill translate into action? So when students go back to their campuses, they put on their own student town hall. It was an experience. It wasn't just going to a conference. So how do you translate those skills into action? They did their own town hall. Phenomenal. We were so proud of those students. And they are already talking about how that experience changed their lives, but not how it just changed their lives, but how they're going to take that information back to their campuses, and that they're going to be able to be true transformational leaders. And so we have done that for the last 3 years, and our first theme was We Stand on the Shoulders of Giants. The second one was Just Imagine, to whom, right. You know, just imagine. No boundaries, no limitations, only possibilities. This time we're talking about mobilizing, moving into action. So it's about what we stand on and how we pour into the young people. Before they came into space, we prayed over them. We prayed over everything that happened. You know, we made it a point to say every person that comes through the door will be touched. It didn't matter that there were hundreds there. We needed to be able to touch them. They needed to be able to be transformed when they left that space. So that's the work that the Bryant Educational Leadership Group is doing. And we have people, you know, from all over the country. We are a global organization. I have a staff member that's in Amsterdam, have somebody in Maryland, somebody in New York, someone in Atlanta, someone working with us in Florida. So, you know, we're really impacting. You know, we're not just talking. We're about the action as well. And so we're just, you know, really looking forward to what God has to do. We recognize that we have a cultural our organization is based upon, you know, the African-American culture, the history, and the spiritual tenets of the African-American people. So we recognize that everybody might not come from that same framing, but at the same time, we're going to equip them. It's like you said earlier, we meet them where they are and provide them with what they need to be able to move into a different space.
Absolutely. So when I heard a lot of things in there, and I was going to go somewhere with a question, but I said, no, I'm not going to do it, but you brought me right back to it, right? You know, I have a series or a notion of what I call the me now culture, where it's part of we're fighting.
That's good.
About me, and I want it now. And because of that me now culture, we get idle. Idle in the truest sense, being standing in fear and doing nothing, but idle in the sense of irreverence to God, D, dependent on things that are not of him, L, loyalty that's misplaced, okay, and E, entitlement. So those are the things from a global perspective, and as well as local and national, that we have to break. But it goes to your point. So you start the conference by praying over them. And I said, that is the key. So talk about how important is your faith, God is your work.
You know what, Eric? My faith is at the core of everything that I do. Like I said, I grew up in the South. My dad was a Baptist minister. So I grew up in the church. But it becomes something different when you come to your own realization of who God is for yourself.
Right.
And so I talked this year at ASLE about making sure that you are authentic. You know, and so who I am at my core is a believer, and I believe that I'm called to do the work of God.
Amen.
And so that's my calling. It might not be anybody else's calling, but I make sure that I'm surrounded by people who have the same degree of faith and who have that same belief system, because it's important that you are equally yoked. You talked about that earlier in terms of the mission of your organization and how it is that you move things, you know. And so for us, faith, belief in God, you know, trusting him that you're walking in your call, leaning on him so you're not leaning on your own understanding, that's the guiding principle for what it is that we do. And without
Absolutely.
Him, I'm nothing. And, you know, like I said, he gets all the glory for what it is that we're able to do with BELG. And so I'm just grateful that I'm surrounded by elders and young folks who share that same belief and those same philosophies and who use that as their foundation in terms of the work that we're doing.
Yeah, it is at the center of the village, right? It is absolutely the center of the village.
Exactly.
So, you know, with that, so what's next? What should we be looking for from your organization, as well as how can people find you and your website and those types of things, and we'd be looking out for Zafia, because I just have this feeling in my spirit that you are about to move and shake some things loose, and just love to hear that.
You know what? What I love about BELG and the people that I work with is that we are innovators and we are creators. And it's awesome when we challenge our students to be innovators and to be creative. And one thing is, when I tell people about Agile, I'm like, you won't come back and have the same experience the second time around. Every single time you come in the space, we're going to do something different. We're going to really be transformative in the space that we're working in. So BELG, we have a lot of incredible things that is forthcoming. We have our ASLE experience on our East Coast. We are getting ready to now expand ASLE to the West Coast. So this upcoming year, you will see another African-American student leadership experience that will be on the West Coast, and we're excited about that. We're excited about being able to give students international opportunities. We're excited about being able to not only develop student leaders, but to develop advisors and administrators and other people who are working with students so we can empower them to do the work. And so we have a lot of upcoming things that, as we continue to expand, we ultimately will be doing pre-collegiate programs. We're going to be able to help develop students at a very early age until they go through that college pipeline, you know, really encouraging them to be successful at every area of their life. You know, part of what we're doing now is identifying partnerships and collaborations so we can really look at other organizations and be a vehicle to really involve everybody in advancing this work. There's space for everybody in doing this. It's not just about one organization. It's how can we all come together to develop this next generation of global leaders. So if people want to learn more about what we're doing, they can go to www.belgllc.com. That's www.belgllc.com. We encourage everybody to sign up to be a part of our mailing list. We encourage colleges and universities to sign up their students for one of the best experiences in the country. We already have our date set for next year. The African American Student Leadership Experience on the East Coast will take place January the 8th through the 11th, 2015, at the Washington, D.C. Renaissance. You'll be able to find all of that information on our website. We encourage you to come on board, to partner with us, and to help us be able to transform the world.
Sure. I can see us partnering sometime soon on something. I just can see it right now, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, you know, of course, if our friends hadn't realized by now, we of course, went to college together and we knew each other for a long time. And of course,
yes.
I can see the dreamer in you, but you also, of course, probably saw some things in me. And some things have changed and some
yes.
things have stayed the same, but I'm still a little mischievous at times. So I'm going to switch gears here for you know, this past
okay.
weekend, if you remember where you were 16 years ago in the cold of Chicago on the 17th.
Oh, my goodness, my first snow ever.
at our wedding, so Ty and I just celebrated our 16th year anniversary. Of course, you know, this year we've been together almost 20 years. It's been a long time, you know, since we met at JSU. But, you know, I'm going to be a bit personal here. I want friends to know that you actually caught the bouquet 16 years ago at our wedding. And so my question is, you know, when would that catch no longer be in vain, right?
You know what, Erica, I'm asking
is it
that
too
same
personal,
question.
But I just wanted to make you laugh a little bit, right?
Oh, no, not too personal. I'm still waiting for that catch to manifest itself as well. But you know what, I think it's all about divine timing sometimes. And
right.
So I know when God sends that person, the timing is going to be just right. So I'm just going to be patient and wait on him. And I know when he puts me in that right place with the right person, everything will fall in line.
Well, amen to that. Amen. Thanks for going there with me. I just couldn't resist when I was looking at pictures the other day and I saw you with Ty with a picture after catching the bouquet. I said, I can't resist. I have to say something, right?
That is hilarious.
Well, you know,
those were good times.
You've been great. You know, I really applaud for starting where you are, using what you have, and just moving what the Lord have you to do. Can, you know, starting as a dreamer, staying a dreamer, we all have challenges, but let those challenges really suppress that dreaming aspect of yourself, right? You know, and being mm-hmm. willing to stand, you're asking others to stand on the shoulders of giants, but you're willing to stand on shoulders of giants in order to make an impact in this world. And while you're doing it, you're giving God the glory. You're on cue with what he's asking to call mm-hmm. you. How special is that? And so I my hat's off, you know, and I love it. I'm glad that you're doing this. Any way I can help come back on or spread the word or come speak or vice versa,
awesome.
You know, I'm open and it'll be absolutely a glorious time. There's no doubt.
Absolutely. I look forward to, you know, definitely staying connected. We're doing very similar work and, you know, it's going to be great to partner with a great friend.
Absolutely. So last thing, is there something that I didn't ask and I should have that you want people to know, or I think we covered a lot of different things?
I think we've really kind of covered and talked about the mission of the organization and just my thoughts in terms of what's important in life. And so I think we covered just about everything, but, you know, I always, anytime I have a space to be able to celebrate the people who came before me, I take that opportunity to do so. So I'm just grateful and thankful to have had parents, you know, who continue to pour in my life and, you know, who prayed for me and who equipped me with everything that I needed to be able to do the work that I'm doing today. So just always want to pay homage to them and for those who came before me. And so I'm just extremely grateful. There were many different mentors and role models, one of which Dr. Carol F.S. Hardy, so I also have to mention her name. She was someone who really inspired me to do the work that I'm doing today. So I'm just eternally grateful for her and the mentorship and the guidance that she had in my life. And we just look forward to doing great things and really helping to impact the lives of young people.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. Hey, thanks for joining us. Thank you for leading where you are. It's been an absolute delight, and we're going to continue to pray for you, and I know that you can continue to empower and inspire and impact this world and bring some youth up, and so we can really be at the forefront of impacting lives and really making a change, transforming our society for the good.
Right.
Absolutely. Hey, well, thank you. Have a great night, and again, I really appreciate you taking the time out, especially with the football night. I know how big of a fan at times, but I really appreciate it. It's been a wonderful, been a blessing.
Well, we already got paid in earlier, so I'm good.
Absolutely. Okay, well, great. Well, good night. So, friends, that was Sophia Bryant, founder and CEO of Bryant Educational Leadership Group. You can find her at www.belglc.com. That's belglc.com. And she was helping us today with talking about MLK, the drum major, who has the whistle baton. And I think it's resounding that the whistle baton is actually in our hands. So after the break, we'll close things up. And if you got any questions or comments, feel free to call us in and raise your hand to ask any particular questions. And we'd love to hear from you. This is On Cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. We'll be right back.
Let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
So So thanks. We're back. Thanks for staying us. We're listening on cue. I'm your host, Eric Powell. Our mission here is to lead where you are, getting us on cue with God's will and his purpose. Follow us on Twitter at qleadership.org. We're taking a call, and I think we got a few questions and calls a little bit after Sophia left, but we want to try to take and feel those before so we can try to address some of those. Of course, Sophia, if you're still listening, feel free to call back in. We can chime in, but I'll try to answer one of these questions and so forth. But so Kennedy, what was the question we got on, what did we get it from?
Bianchi.
Okay.
He or she said, what does she mean we can transform the world?
What does she mean by transforming the world? I would love for her to be able to answer that, but if I could say it in her stead, I think we just heard it. I think we just heard it in what Dr. King just talked about. He's going to live for the day where all of God's children can be able to stand and join hands and sing in the old Negro spiritual. That freedom is really in the song of love, and ultimately to really lead and help and impact people's lives. As she started with injustice, injustice can be anywhere. I think that's the quote. Maybe I messed it up, but ultimately it is understanding that you have a purpose, getting aligned with that purpose, and doing God's will. You align, no matter where you are, if you align yourself or get on key with that, you'll impact the world. So that's ultimately, that would be my answer, and ultimately I can bring her back on or even get her to send an email or post on our Facebook page on how she would answer that. So hopefully that suffices. Not, feel free to ping us again. So do we have anyone else, Kennedy?
We have a caller on.
Okay, and
I'm not sure who it is, but I put them off mute.
Okay, so do we have a caller? You got a question for us? Probably not. So we'll continue on the show. If you got a question, feel free to ping us again, and we'll bring you on. So you know when you hear that quote, that part of Dr. King's dream speech, it is really the climax of the speech, and ultimately it built up to a moment to where his message is really put him on the map in my mind as really that transformational leader. I ask people all the time who were living during that time, is of course before my time, you know, did you really know he was going to be that transformational leader? But ultimately, some say no, but we knew he was transforming things, but didn't necessarily know he was going to make the impact that he made going forward. So let me stop here, Kennedy. We do have a caller.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so you listen to On Cue. This is Eric. You got a question?
Eric, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. What about yourself?
I wonder, come on, only selected things that Martin Luther King said in speeches are played, and really, that I think they're trying to put him in a view in which necessarily he wasn't really in.
Now, say more.
For instance, well, listen to this little short excerpt from Martin Luther King.
Well, he's gonna roll the show in, right?
You may not remember because it's way back now, several years, but it was the beginning of a movement where 50,000 black men and women refused absolutely to ride the city buses, and we walked together for 381 days.
Yes, sir.
That's what we got to learn in the North. The Negroes have to learn to stick together.
You never hear that.
Okay,
well,
so you never hear
Negroes.
That.
No.
The Negroes have to stick together, right?
Yeah.
So,
well, that's what he said.
There's something wrong with him saying that, or what's your thought? I'm trying to make sure I follow, because I guess the.
Well, no, I'm not saying there's something wrong with him saying it, because he said what he meant, and the people there agreed with him. But what I'm saying is that when you hear speeches played today and, you know, recent time, there are only certain speeches that seem to change his philosophy, his total philosophy, and
okay.
how he felt. I don't think Martin Luther King was all inclusive.
Are you saying that less nonviolent or a little bit more militant? I'm just trying to make sure I capture what you're trying to portray, because
he's saying that Negroes need to stick together. You know, of course,
last comment with the Negroes got to fit. You know, that Negro, of course, is, you know, somewhat we don't always use it, but people use Negro before they use Black and African American through the whole element. Before that time, that was the word everybody used.
I know that's the word that everybody used. I'm saying that he was saying that this particular people needs to speak together.
Right.
See, today, we're trying to make them all close to the point where they are fully not even recognizable anymore. So I'm saying that from listening to many speeches that you don't hear played during quote-unquote Black History Month, you don't hear played experts on news and grants and so forth, where he was more, I guess you could say, in a sense, he was more concentrated and segregated on the well-being of Black people, Negroes, Black people that had progressed into African America, though there is a difference between the two. And you know that. I mean, why?
Yeah, so, all right, so here's the thing. I think I know where you're going. Hopefully I can help you and help each other in this. I do agree that it's about controlling the narrative. We get that a lot in politics and other things in our days. It's about controlling the story and how we picture certain people, right? And then at the same time, you know, we as a society also just look at the good or look at the things that are not controversial about a person. But, you know, to go and say that, you know, he was the leader in our mind of Black people, of Negroes at the time. That was the common ground. If you take Q, that is the common ground of where, hey, we're in this together because we're oppressed because of our race or whatever the case may be. That's what it all started from. That's what the movement was all about, started from race. And so if you don't go in and say we got to stick together as a team and create a shared vision, and when we stick together in order to move a people from one condition to another, and then ultimately get them to where it's a here's your role in that, but it starts with the common ground element. So I'm not surprised.
Why come that's
not
being
shocked.
Said today? Why come that's not being said today?
Because
a message is being sent out that the Blacks need to stick together in order to, in this case, he was giving an example of where they accomplished something there. You know, some totally disagree with that.
What was his mission? What was his mission in your mind through this whole movement? What was the mission? And then tell me what the mission, and then tell me what did he accomplish in that mission?
Well, I think his mission was directed at Blacks in the South. Blacks in the North didn't experience the things that Blacks in the South was being experiencing. So maybe he was trying to get Blacks in the North to come on board and work to make the changes of the experiences that Black in the South were going through. Do you think?
Well,
that's what he said. That's what he said in the excerpt.
Yeah, that's a good part of it. I don't have all the content. And so if we put that setting in Montgomery in the 50s, put that in that setting. And when you know you know that your bosses are on you, that you need to ride this bus or you're gonna get fired, or you got police that's following you when you're walking at night, you got to be in the house before it's dark, and things are getting tough. Things are getting tough to where you can't pay your bills, where you're getting challenged. It's kind of similar to what Q started with Nehemiah. You're getting attacked on all from economically, socially, educationally, politically. You're getting attacked. And so the message is we got to stick together if we're going to go through this tough time. So it could be part of that context too. What you think?
Well, the people, like I said before, people up north wasn't experiencing those things. I was trying to show, whereas what seems to be politically correct in the things that he, what you hear that he said,
mm-hmm.
and the things that you don't hear that he said, apparently is not politically correct and comfortable to everybody.
That's the problem,
and,
right? That word right there, politically correct. That's a part of the problem of our society.
Because
today.
If he had said that, you know, at the same time, Malcolm X was also in his heyday, and he was teaching a whole different. He wasn't teaching a different philosophy. It had to do about conditions, but
right.
he had a whole different idea on how far a person should bow their head. I guess you could say it, if to better explain it. But
I get it.
As I
you
said
know,
before,
I asked a question about your mission, and in my perspective, and it's not necessarily from his or anybody else. I think his mission was about love, and so at the end of the day,
well, but you have to love yourself before you can love somebody else.
I understand that, but you know, the Lord also says, we hear that all the time. You got to love yourself before you love somebody else. Maybe true, maybe not. But,
yeah,
you know, there's no blessing that the Lord gives you just for you. It's always for somebody
yeah,
else.
And I don't
right?
think he was just calling on people who believe, because I think he had to call on people who was non-believers also, because he said, you know, whether it was black believers or black non-believers, he is saying that we Negroes need to stick together.
I got it, you know, and I get it in the context of, you know, not having the right context of the whole quote that you put there. And I can see him saying that because during some tough times. Why not?
Well, he was talking about the Montgomery bus stop. He talked about Rosa Parks, and
right.
he
right. So that,
talked about
exactly
the number of days. So,
that's
yeah,
exactly
that was the context
that
it was about.
Even I didn't know where it came from, but I said, imagine this. Imagine what they're going through, and they have people wanting to quit. People wanting to stop.
Here, let me share it again.
I'll need to share it again. Let's cut it off. We'll need to share it again. I understand. We agree.
You may not remember it because it's way back now, several years, but...
So if you hear me, I need to hear the quote again. And once I finish playing, just raise your hand. We can bring you back in. But ultimately... the mission, I believe, it was about love. And so, yeah, there are some times to where you had to merge and champion and encourage people to move forward. And that one quote doesn't disparage who he was and what the Lord called him to do. That's the way I look at it. And so raise your hand
yeah,
again
so,
if you want to back in and continue. Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to get across.
Great point.
Never heard that speech.
There are some people who want to control the narrative about him. But at the same time, you can't deny that his purpose on this, he achieved that of really breaking that mold, not only just the people that have been oppressed, black folks, but the oppressors themselves.
Well, I can see that. I think the oppressors themselves, even today, they continue to have their own ways and thoughts, which they're entitled to. You know, the whole concept is that people have a constitution. The constitution protects you to the right to associate and disassociate with whomever you want. Just so long as you as long as you don't violate someone's civil rights in doing so. And that's
okay.
what it's basically all about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that you're supposed to go out of your way trying to change people's hearts, you know.
That's where we diverge right there. And I really think that in the higher calling, that's what his message is about. It's about love. It's about changing people's hearts. But really and truly, we didn't need the Civil Rights Act because we already had these constitutions. They had the rights already because of these men's hearts were hardened. Whomever were in place. The hearts were hardened. That's why the Lord bring on transformation leaders like Dr. King in order to really move people forward. In order to soften the heart, only thing that's going to pierce it is love. So that's what we deserve.
Really? See, I lived during this period. You read about these the time.
Yeah,
I'm sure
you are. I knew you were going to go there too.
I wasn't going to go there. I just tell you because I knew that period, but I also
was born
felt.
On the plantation, both sides of my family. I saw the Klan walk down the street. I saw the Klan come to my house. So I understand those things, what they were going through. I heard the stories of my parents, my sisters and brothers. I'm the last of 9 kids, so we can't go there because I felt it. I was still part there. My folks are still sharecroppers in the 70s. So we can't disperse the message of mine by coming at me. That makes sense?
Well, nobody's trying to come at you. I don't know why you take that defensive. What I was trying to get to the point is that I've seen the reaction of people with what was going on in the South. I stayed up north. And as I said before, that the things that they was experiencing down there, people in the north, blacks in the north, was not experiencing, although they had sentiments toward the people in the South. And I think that's what it's about. But as far as trying to change, it wasn't the threat of people's heart. It was the threat of laws, especially the implications of the federal laws as they stood to be applied.
I do agree with you to that point, but I still say if men's hearts was not hardened against black folks, we wouldn't need those laws. We wouldn't need those laws. And the only way you pierce through any type of hardened heart is through love. And I believe that's what
the laws was given through. The laws was given through the men. What the point is that the laws weren't being enforced. That's what the problem was. The laws was given.
The Klan, Jim Crow, all of that because of hardened hearts, of fear of people on a certain people because of the color of their skin or whatever the case is. So even though, the laws were there, they're not being enforced. They had some loopholes. Hey, still some people who were in control had hardened hearts. They continue to impose their will.
Yeah, if the Klan, see, the only thing the Klan could do was violate somebody's civil rights through assault, just like we have young black males committing assault on others in Chicago today. And if you don't have the laws there in order to enforce that criminal action, just like we didn't, the laws were not being enforced against the Klan, what they done against blacks in the South.
Oh, I get it. I really do. Even if they were enforced against the Klan or not, still the men in the Klan had hardened hearts. They still.
Yeah,
you
but
still
that's
go
all
down
right
to
for them.
When you can go to that particular person, if they were in the Klan or not, it comes down to the decision to do something against another people. And what's the root of that is at core.
Yeah, I understand that, but think about what you're saying. You're trying to change people's hearts through laws. I think
So you missed my point. I laws can't change people's hearts. I was saying that Dr. King's message, his mission was about love. That's all I was saying. The laws can't change people's hearts. They can only just keep people in the rule of thumb, if you will, of how we socialize with each other, as John Locke would always say.
People have, as I said before, we have a right to socialize with whomever we feel we want to. And like I heard the lady say that she wants to go and change the world, and people in other parts of the world take offense to that because, for instance, let's say democracy. A Western democracy don't fit them, and they don't want it. And when they hear someone coming along and say, well, what you're doing is it's not right. I think you should do it like that. And that's really offensive because people in other parts of the world have sovereign rights. They have a right to live as they feel fit. And I think that it's not nothing wrong with them. It's something wrong, I think, with those who look at them and think it's something wrong with them.
Is there a reason not to do something, to follow a mission, a calling that you feel the Lord has sent you just because of what other people think?
Well,
I mean,
That's another point because you're following your belief, and those other people may not have those beliefs.
And that's okay.
And that's where –
That's okay.
Right. And they have a right to say that we don't want that. You know, it's one thing to that's one of the reasons why Stand Your Ground laws came about.
I don't think she's
just
trying to impose her will, oppose her thoughts on people. If her message resonates, great. If it doesn't, she moves on.
Yeah, I understand that, but I have seen cases.
Well, if it resonates, great.
I have seen.
Move on.
I have seen cases where the government, and see, they will look at you as American. We see cases where American politics, especially with this administration lately, how it weighs the carrot in front of developing countries and say, if you don't change this, that, you don't get this carrot.
Yeah.
And
I'm glad these ministries not really dealing at the government. I know you have to deal with those geopolitical elements associated with it, but I don't think what she is trying to do is in that realm.
I don't think she is neither. I think it's just the way she said it. It sounds real good that we're going to go out and change the world, but in actuality, that's not possible, and really it shouldn't even be a mission.
Well, you know, that's one man's opinion. That's one man's opinion, and with that, if everyone had that such opinion, we'll all be idle, just like those people in the North who were sitting around not knowing what was happening in the South, and those people, and some people today sitting around idle. If there's an issue in society, you know, why not go challenge it? So, but with that, hey, I thank you for your call. I know we've got to wrap up. Please continue to listen and chime in whenever you. I would love to have a more dialogue with you, and really appreciate it. Have a great night, okay?
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Any minutes? Okay, so thanks. A good caller there, and I guess I continue to learn to listen a little bit more, and then just kind of absorb some things. But ultimately, you know, there are things in society that that may stop or hinder someone from moving forward with the mission, what they're calling. And I think it's to the point of what we talked about. You standing on shoulders of giants. You got to be willing to sacrifice. Like Dr. King was, willing to sacrifice, no matter what the case is, because there's going to be some tough times, does not mean that you should not do it, just because you're scared or fear of what may happen to you. Self-preservation. And it's really, and this life that we lead is about two things, giving to God the glory and impacting others. And so essentially, when we move forward in certain ministry, make sure those premises that you have in place. So we talked about today a modern day example, a true transformation leader, just like a drum major. Dr. King, he was a conductor. He operated for the glory of God and nothing else. He created foundational discipleship and trust, and his purpose, and he empowered people, controlled the tempo like a drum major would. He kind of helped work and change the inner working mechanisms of the situation, how things are perceived, and really help move this nation to a higher being. Of course, he was pretty highly visible and so forth, but as he said in his statement, you know, he don't want to be known as the Nobel Peace Prize winner or some political activist. Just, he just want to be known as someone tried to love somebody. So he was a leader. He honored others through love, and ultimately his purpose. And his words were anointed. I go to a grave thinking, know, and believing that. He carried Lord's authority with him, and he brought a message of love that laid the foundation that freed the people from oppression, but more so freed the minds of the oppressors, and an answer to the prayers of generations of people who went before us, who we stand on their shoulders, and united all of God's people. So when Dr. King called for us to join hands and sing in the old Negro spiritual, free at last, thank God Almighty, we're free at last, he's bringing a message of love. And that's what I was trying to share with the last caller. He was laying a foundation, not just to free those people as a share, but free the minds of everyone. Not only white men, black men, Jews and Gentiles, unite all people, Protestants and Catholics, was truly his mission. It was truly mission of a transformation leader. He was onto something. And his word was not really merely for us to join hands in constant protest, but to unite all God's people in love. So today, let us remember him as we ask, you know, that Dr. King, he really tried to love somebody and honor him by loving somebody regardless of the differences. And so today's question, MLK, the drum major, who has his whistle and baton, who carries his legacy, I challenge that, you know, all of us to become a drum major and take that whistle and baton, that whistle of doing God's will and spreading the message as the master taught, and taking that baton and impacting and leading people where you are. So So let us help you be that purpose, get on person, be that conductor, and set that tempo and move it forward. So today we ask you, continue to believe that the Lord has called you, be that drum major, take that Wilson baton, and lead people where they are. So, you know, a few thanks for today. I'll give all honor and praise to the Lord Savior Jesus Christ, those who tuned in, my special guest, Athea Bryant, founder and CEO of Bryant Educational Leadership Group, the producer and assistant Kennedy Powell here, and my better half and my wife, Ty, my youngest Princess Carson, my mother, sisters and brothers, happy 50th to my brother Tom, and happy, I can't say the number, to my sister Gladys. My friends on Facebook, dedicate this show to my family as we deal with a yet another death in our family, especially my Brenda, who is the last of part of a generation of losing two brothers and a sister within a 10-month time. We'll continue to pray and cover her. If you'd like to be a sponsor, please email us at onq@qleadership.com. This has been On Q. I'm your host, Eric Powell. Until next week.
How do you lead a people who are starved, who are broken, who are isolated?
You lead them where they are by getting them on cue. For God's will, by getting them on cue with His calling on their lives. Let us help you get on cue.
How powerful is your leadership? Do people trust you? Would people follow you if you were not their boss, not their parent, not their sibling, not their commanding officer? Let us help you get on the queue. Let us help you get on cue.